Good morning. Natalie asked me last time she played what I would like, if I had any requests, and I said, yeah, Dvorak, Mozart, Beethoven. So I hope you were listening at the end. Isn't that Dvorak, that beautiful piece? Thanks, Natalie. Dorothy Hale here? Anyway, she called last time and told me that, you know, I had told you the story of the plumber in my house, that I put on the last four death songs of Strauss, and he came out and sat on the stairs to listen, his head in his hands. Well, she called and told me that she went up, once had a painter in the house, and she went up and found him asleep in the closet. So I was going to share that with you. We really do appreciate our nursery so much. I mean, there's so much involved with that nursery. And I know we switched high councilman, and Hazel was telling him everything they needed, and he was like, that is all going on? Like, I have to help you do all that? So they're so wonderful. They have a prayer meeting, they have all these things for your children. So if your friends are afraid to come because of, of leaving their children, you should know how wonderful it is. Today we're talking in our study in Matthew 20, Luke 12 through 14. These are wonderful chapters and really intriguing things in them. So go with me to Luke 14 and we'll start right off the bat. And it came to pass, verse 1, as he went into the house of one of the chief Pharisees to eat bread on the Sabbath day, that they watched him. Aren't those chilling words? They watched him. They were ready for him. But he knows exactly what's happening. This Sabbath was the main day for entertainments for the Jews, and they obviously made a lot of exceptions for themselves, but not for Jesus. And so here he's invited to the house of a ruler, a person in high position, maybe a member of the Sanhedrin. And the invitation is not hospitable, but so they could watch him. So they're watching him with hostility and malice. And on the way in, he sees a man, verse 2, with dropsy. Who knows what dropsy is? It's edema. So where water accumulates in your tissues, and it's often from congestive heart failure. So, people have speculated, did they put this man there because he's there as Jesus walks into this house to see if they could catch him? So, verse 3, Jesus brings it to them, and he says, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day? Well, they hold their peace. They can't answer. They can't say yes. And they dare not say no. So then Jesus says, which of you having an ass or an ox that falls into a pit will not straightway pull him out? And what he is saying is a man not more important than a beast? And of course he catches him again. And then he heals the man. So the tone is now set for this dinner he's at. And he's about to use it to teach them what he wants them to hear. Always in control, isn't he? In fact, if I were to make a chart and were to put almost everything we talk about today around the circle, it would all be about this one profound concept in the middle. And so you can hear it as we go. So verse 7, and he put forth a parable to those which were bidden, when he marked how they chose out the chief rooms, saying unto them. So he looks around. This man that he healed is probably on the way in. Then he enters the house, and he watches their ridiculous struggle to sit in the best seat. So in those days, the Jews did the same system that the Greeks and Romans did, and the chief seat was in the middle seat on the couches. So I brought my pillows that are like very, you know, how they sat on these, you know, couches. So they all wanted the best seat, right, to be bid. Every people has a culture. We do, and they did also. I read this little statement about this rabbi. A good illustration of the pride of rabbis is the conduct of Rabbi Simeon ben Shita when invited to dinner by King Junius. This was probably about 100 BC. He placed himself between the king and the queen, saying, "Exalt wisdom, and she shall exalt thee, and make thee to sit among princes." Obviously saying he was wisdom, right? So he plonks himself down in between the king and the queen. So, of course, not all rabbis were like this. But at this dinner, they are being this way. So their worst characteristics are coming out. You know, pride, ambition, self-advancement. And so in verse 10, Jesus tells them, you better sit in the low seat, because the master of the house might come and ask you to move, and you will be embarrassed. So now we start to get this theme that he repeats over and over again in different ways. Verse 11, for whosoever exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. Haven't you heard this before as he teaches it? In other words, it never works to exalt yourself. You might as well just sit in the low seat and wait to be exalted. So go with me to Matthew 20. Along this same line, we have the parable of the laborers in the vineyard. And this parable that he starts here is closely linked to what has gone on before in chapter 19. So if you look in just right there, 19:27, Peter asks him a question. He says, we have forsaken all and followed thee. What shall we have thereafter? What will our reward be? And Jesus promises them a great reward in verse 28 of 19. He says the 12 will sit upon the 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. But then he adds this last verse, this little caveat. He says, verse 29 of 19, or verse 30, actually, but many that are first shall be last, and the last shall be first. And then he gives this parable. Now, here's a really interesting thing, that if you look in 20 and 16, so just turn the page, he says, So the last shall be first, and the first last. For many are called, but few chosen. So he's bookending this with this parable in the middle. So this parable is about what he's talking about. With these two statements, he reverses the order, but it's the same statement. So here is the parable. And what it basically is a man goes out and hires workers at different times all day long. But he pays them the same amount of money at the end of the day. Well, as you can imagine, the ones who are hired at 11 o'clock at night and work till 12, that the ones who are hired at the beginning of the day are not too happy that they all get the same amount of money, right? So look on Matthew 20, verse 12. Saying, these last have wrought but 1 hour, and thou hast made them equal unto us which have borne the burden and the heat of the day. In other words, they're stamping their feet. This is not fair, right? And then the master in verse 13 said, he answered one of them and said, friend, I do thee no wrong. Didst thou not agree with me for a penny? We agreed how much I would pay you. And then, verse 15, is thine eye evil because I am good? Or in the New English Version, why be jealous because I am kind? So here's a question. Are we resentful when the Lord is good to someone else? He's making a point here, isn't he? Does our reward diminish when the Lord blesses someone else? Certainly, as humans, we spend many hours in bitterness over the success of other people, don't we? So then in verse 16, Jesus concludes what we read. The last shall be first, and the first last. So, you know, what do you think about this? All I can say is we do not know the mind of God. And we can only worry about being our best self. Now that sounds like a nice little platitude. I mean, but when it comes down, when something burns the rubber, you know what I mean? When your child, who has spent an entire year learning a Mendelssohn concerto, consent of the teacher over at Skyline that she will play in the in concerto night, and then at the last minute he takes her out. You know, what do you say to a child? Or a child who has spent 12 years playing competitive soccer with one team, moved up with them, is now playing for Skyline, and her senior year is dropped from the team. It's not just the team, it's all of her friends. And you are so angry for your children. And you're afraid if you go and talk to these people, you will take a knife. I'm just kidding. I shouldn't even joke about that. So what do? You know? Oh, it's okay, you know, you say, but it's really not okay. Well, here's my current favorite scripture, D&C 11, 12 through 14, and I'll read it to you. I don't know if you go through some that have great meaning to you at certain times, but I'll be part of it. Put your trust in that spirit which leadeth to do good yea, to do justly, to walk humbly, to judge righteously, and this is my spirit. So put your trust in that spirit. There are spirits around. Section 50 says there are various spirits floating around. What spirit are you going to hang on to? So put your trust in that spirit, for this is my spirit. And then, here's the promise, I will impart unto you of my spirit, which shall enlighten your mind, shall fill your soul with joy. And then you'll know all things you should do. Is that not the most beautiful scripture? Who would not, you know, we all have our priorities, but who would not want their minds enlightened and their souls filled with joy all the time? So, Alex never played competitive soccer again. It took her an entire year to get over that. And Kara played the piano at the BYU graduation in the Marriott Center, a solo, and Debussy water music. And it was the most beautiful thing, filling that entire Marriott Center you ever heard. But it wasn't with an orchestra. But you go on, don't you? So here is this interesting parable. The rich man and Lazarus. Go back with me to Luke 16. And we'll move on. This is only in Luke. And it's this interesting little parable. I would bet it was from an incident that Jesus observed. It's not really doctrine, although there's a little doctrine in it, but it's really a story like he always told. A story that has all these layers of meaning. Stories were common in the ancient East. That was how people talked. So chapter 16 of Luke, verse 19, it starts. There was a certain rich man which was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. Well, what was purple? You read that. Purple was a rich material dyed with the liquid from shellfish. It was very costly. And of course, linen was extremely costly. So, and verse 20, and there was a certain beggar named Lazarus. This is the only parable in which we have a name. Isn't that interesting? Lazarus means God helps. So, there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, which was laid at his gate full of sores. Even the dogs came and licked his sores. It was so awful. They both die, verse 22. The beggar, Lazarus, goes to Abraham's bosom, or paradise. It's another word for paradise. The rich man goes to hell and its torments. Verse 25. The rich man has begged for Abraham to send Lazarus to help him. He's burning up in hell. So this is a story, remember. And then Abraham reminds him, verse 25, son, remember that thou in thy lifetime receiveth good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things, but now he is comforted, and thou art tormented. And verse 26, and besides all this, between us and you there is a great gulf fixed, so that they which would pass from hence to you cannot, neither can they pass to us who wants to come. So there's no going in between hell and paradise. Well, this idea of the great gulf is interesting to Mormons and non-Mormons. Why? Why is this so interesting? Well, because there is an afterlife. In the first place, And a lot of Jews did not believe in an afterlife, right? All of the Sadducees did not believe there was an afterlife. So he is saying there is an afterlife where our souls are conscious. Life after death continues. There is a space between heaven and hell. And when you die, you wait in one or the other. And we could stop here and talk about Alma 40, starting about verse 9, where he talks about these two places, spirit prison and paradise. But I'll just say quickly, in Peter, 1 Peter 3:19, he says, by which he also Jesus went and preached unto the spirits in prison. And then 4:6, for this cause was the gospel preached also to them that are dead. So until Jesus died, there was no bridging this gulf. He was the one who was able to go between the two spirit homes and fulfill Isaiah's prophecy in 61:1. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives and the opening of the prison to them that are bound. So that's, you know, kind of a whole another topic, which I'm gonna just not talk about, but I wanted to at least bring it up. So that's kind of the obvious meaning of the parable, or this is the obvious meaning, that what happens to men in this world is the reverse of what they think is gonna happen, right? Did the rich man think he would die and go straight to hell? Probably not. But Jesus is telling them, God is no respecter of persons. Inequalities that are on earth will be adjusted in heaven. And Abraham is telling the man, you already had all the good things here on earth. The time for repentance is past. You're cooked, buddy. So, have you heard of Albert Schweitzer? Albert Schweitzer, this was the parable that made him change his life and go down to Africa and open that hospital. This parable in West Central Africa in 1912. So here's a question. Is it wealth that puts the rich man into spirit prison? Is it poverty that puts Lazarus into paradise? What does the parable tell you? You know, well, I think he's saying it's not necessarily bad, but maybe it has its temptations that are hard to resist. And poverty is not good, but does poverty make being good easier? But here's the problem. Here's the real problem of what is happening. The rich man did not see Lazarus. He hardly saw him. He wasn't a person to him. He gave him a few scraps from his table. He was so busy with his comfortable life, his important life, he just wasn't a person. And what is Jesus saying when he speaks of the great gulf? What is he implying underneath? If a man or woman chooses heaven here, why can't she expect a heaven there? What makes the gulf? That's the interesting question. What makes the gulf so that you cannot move from one to the other? Something must be happening. I have three answers. Well, we lose our taste, our instinct, our sense for what is really heaven when we leave the thick things of the spirit. Remember Moroni talks in Mormon 9 about how we go where we are comfortable. He says, do you suppose you could be happy to dwell with the holy being when your souls are racked with consciousness of your guilt. In other words, you just would not be happy there. You would be miserable in a place you don't understand anymore. And if a man lives without compassion, he digs a big chasm between himself and other people and himself and God. So you see how he's making his own gulf. You know, no day, I read this, no day is an ordinary day. Every time the rich man walked by Lazarus, he neglected him. Every time Lazarus was not embittered by being poor, he was making a place for him in heaven. So the rich man is not being intentionally cruel. He just didn't see Lazarus. And he probably paid his tithing and his fast offerings and went on with his life. Jesus talks a lot about seeing. We talked about it last week, or 2 weeks ago, in John 9, where he heals the blind man. He's saying, I'm going to make the people who cannot see, see, and the ones who see will know they are blind anyway. And here's my last answer, is what makes the gulf. Let me just bring up that word, entitled. Do we start to think we deserve what we have? Abraham, look at verse 25 again. Abraham said, son, remember, this is all a gift. Remember, this is the time of probation. Remember. It's not money, it's not power or position or your church calling or anything that will save you. It's who you are. So there's a little epilogue. The rich man begs Abraham to send Lazarus to warn his brothers so they won't end up where he is. And in verse 31, Jesus says, they know the scriptures, they've read them. If they hear not Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rose from the dead, referring, you know, to himself as to what was to come. So signs can intrigue and terrify, but they're not going to change anything in the end. Does anybody recognize a Christmas story in this little parable, and especially the end? What? Scrooge! Isn't this interesting? Now, I don't know if Charles Dickens read this, but I have a suspicion that he did. But does Scrooge change? Does he listen? He does, doesn't he? Isn't that interesting? Okay. I'm going to do just the 10 lepers really quick. This is Matthew 17. And then I want a few minutes for something else. So look at starting about verse 11. Jesus, and I hate to rush, but I'm just going to bring up a few things. Jesus is traveling to Jerusalem. Galilee and Samaria are now both close to him. Everybody's, you know, trying to hurt him. So he goes down that valley of Beth Shean. If you look at a map, there's this valley. And on the outskirts of a village, there are 10 men, lepers, calling to him. 9 are Jews, 1 is a Samaritan. In those days, they did not even talk to each other, unless, of course, they're lepers and then they are all together. So they call to him from afar off. They call Tame, Tame, which means unclean. Can you imagine living your life like that? Jesus responds immediately, verse 14. And when he saw them, he said unto them, go show yourselves unto the priests. And as they went, they were cleansed. So on the way, they are cleansed. It was a requirement from Leviticus, the law, that they had to show themselves to the priest so the priests could declare themselves them clean. And of course, you know what happens. Only one turns back to give thanks. Verse 17. And Jesus, answering, said, "Were there not 10? Where are the 9? Even Jesus, who knows man, is surprised at this ingratitude. We're in chapter of Luke 17. Did I say Matthew? And Kevin's character's there. Sorry. Okay, Luke 17, and we are verse 17. Okay. So, Jesus is surprised himself. Where is the other one? The other 9, he says. And then he says to this man that came back, verse 19, "Arise and go thy way, thy faith hath made thee whole." Probably not referring to his body being healed, but probably his spirit being saved. You have been saved because you have come back. So where indeed were those other 9? Isn't that an interesting question? Were they intimidated by the priests? Were they feeling entitled? Now they deserve to be better. We don't know what happened. Maybe they were just thoughtless. Maybe they were so happy to be better. But is not their ingratitude a worse leprosy than the physical disease? I read, it's as if all these benefits were falling into a deep, silent grave. I could tell you some great stories of gratitude from the Old Testament, but let me just share maybe just one thing this time. Our hymn, "Now Thank We All Our God," was written in the 1500s by Martin Rinkert. Martin Rinkert was a Lutheran minister who was the only surviving pastor in the town of Eilenburg in Saxony, that became Germany. There was a great plague, and he conducted 4,000 funerals that year, including his wife's. And then he writes this hymn. You should look at it sometime. "Now thank we all our God with hearts and hands and voices." Are some people naturally grateful, or is it a choice? Interesting. So, just to end, I want to talk about the lost. So go to Luke 15. This great parable of the 3 lost things. Exquisite parable, the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost child. People have written that in this parable lies the whole gospel. The best statement of Christ's message. The deepest mysteries of divine compassion. That there is joy in heaven when one sinner repents. I mean, where in all human literature is there found such a beautiful, terse, luminous statement of our Father's mercy? So you know these parables, and President McKay gave this really wonderful talk about them. The lost sheep is unintentional. The lost coin is lost through neglect, right? The person in charge of that coin lost it. So you can see where he's going with it. They were careless. The people we lose, you see. But then you come to the lost child, the conscious, willing sinner the son who with his free will takes his birthright, which was a terrible offense, and journeys to a far country, verse 13, squanders all of his substance, falling into degradation and misery, living with pigs, which were so abhorrent to Jews that they called pigs another thing. There was this article in the Deseret News, I just have to share this with you, about moms who direct the play of their children, lose their children's attention. Now this is interesting. So moms who boss their children's play, like say, no, that cow does not go in the window, it goes in the door, honey, you know. Or don't touch your play stove, that's going to be hot. I mean, the mom's trying to help, right? I'm sure I've done it. But this article is saying the child becomes resentful. And then this article, the article says, this was in the Deseret News, many parents do not know that even children, even very small children, have a need to feel autonomous. There is thinking now that this is a kind of a basic part of human nature and begins very early in infancy. You think? If you had a child that wants to be autonomous, we need to leave them alone as much as we can. So here is this boy. I thought that was really interesting and helpful if you're raising small children or grandchildren. So here's this boy who makes his choice. And he stays away until verse 17, and when he came to himself, and he comes back, and the father welcomes him and kisses him. But then you get the brother. The brother, in the translation, you don't really get how rancorous the brother is, how his heart is so angry and jealous. For instance, look over the page, verse 29, when he says, lo, or in other words, see, but in the original, it's more indignant, or when he says, verse 30, this thy son, instead of this my brother. He's pointing out their differences. I mean, and I could go through the whole thing, but let me just ask you, have you ever heard the word schadenfreude? I'm sure I said it wrong. I know you have. It means a pleasure derived from the misfortune of others. And so once again, can we not be happy with each other's success? Do you see how there is kind of a theme, these themes going through? And then the close of the parable, which is just like music, 31 and 32. Son, thou art ever with me. All that I have is thine. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad. For this thy brother was dead and is alive again, was lost and is found. I'm going to show you a clip from a video, a DVD called Jesus of Nazareth. Has anyone watched it? It's 35 years old and so wonderful. I haven't done this before. My children were raised on it. They could, like, you know, quote you things from different places. When we, about halfway through our mission, we went through our zone conferences and showed clips from this movie. It changed our mission. It was so profound. I wish I could show more, but enjoy. It starts out with Matthew and Peter from Peter's house.
What's he doing here?
That's Matthew, the tax collector. Get him out. Peter, your friend Matthew is here. Get out.
blood-sucking tax collector! Don't mess with me here! Out of my house! Stop! Help!
I hear you had a big catch, Simon. We'll talk about it later, shall we? What about this friend of yours? This new preacher or teacher or whatever he is? Am I not allowed to speak with him?
Not in my house.
You seem to be most unwelcome here. I don't know your name, but I know what you do. Levi, or Matthew, I'm known by both names.
And by others.
I see you and I must meet in a place where both of us are welcomed. Is your own house far? Why do you ask?
Should like to have supper with you tonight.
You would enter the house of a sinner.
I would enter any house where I'm welcome.
I said Matthew's my
blood-sucking enemy. I hate Matthew, but all Jesus would say is, well, why don't you join us as well?
Andrew, I'm not like you. I'm not a follower of priests and prophets. I'm a fisherman. I have my family to think of.
You follow the Baptist, now follow this one.
Peter!
Just leave me alone! Why did you bring him here to me? This was my life!
What is? My bullets.
Go on! Follow him! But leave me!
Come on. You can't talk to him when he's like this. Come on.
This is where I belong.
Mark! It's a scandal for you to eat with these people. Don't you know who they are?
We've lived our lives honorably. Make sacrifices to keep the law.
They are thieves, whores, usurers, violent and godless people.
And now you sit and eat with such people who spend their lives in orgies and perversions.
I'm not come to call the virtuous to repentance, but the sinners. They might enter the kingdom of heaven even before you.
Listen, Master, if you go and eat with these people, they will contaminate you. The whole town will abandon you.
James is right.
James, the heart of the Lord is mercy.
You can't!
Peace be with you. Thank you. Come to my house. Rabbi, you are welcome. He's in the same business as I am.
I drink to you in the name of all here.
We want to hear your words.
Speak to us.
No.
Let him decide.
No. I'd like to tell you a story. Sit down.
Son said to his father, "Give me my share of your estate now." father divided his wealth between his two sons. And a few days later, this younger son set off for a distant land. And there he squandered all the money he had on riotous living. Now, not long after this, a great famine swept over the land, and the boy began to starve. He persuaded a farmer to hire him to feed his pigs, but he was so hungry that even the husks he was feeding the swine began to look good to him. And still, nobody gave him anything. Finally, the boy came to his senses. At home, even my father's servants have enough food and to spare. And here I am starving to death. I will go home and ask my father to hire me as one of his servants. And so, he set off. Now he was still some distance from his home when his father saw him coming. And he was so filled with compassion that he ran towards his son and embraced him and kissed him. The boy said, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and you. I am not worthy to be called your son." But his father called for the servants and said, "Bring me the finest robe in the house and put it on. Put rings on his hands and shoes on his feet. Kill the fatted calf. We must celebrate with a feast." My son was dead and is alive again. Now, the older brother, at this time, was working in the fields. And as he came back to the house, he heard the noise of music and dancing. He called for one of the servants and asked what was happening. And he was told. At this, the older brother became very angry, and he refused to go into the house. The father came out, tried to plead with him, but he wouldn't listen. "I have worked for you all this time, all these years, and never once have I disobeyed you. And in all that time, you've never even given me so much as a goat so that I can have a feast with my friends. My younger brother comes back, having spent all your money on hearts. And for him you kill the fatted calf." "Please," said the father. "Please, try to understand. You are always with me. Everything I have is yours. But it is right to celebrate. Brother was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.
Forgive me, Master. I'm
stupid man.
Joy and enlightenment all our lives.